This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. We've got a great show lined up for you. A lot going on this week. Paul Rainwater is going to join us. He's the chair of Governor Landry's Sewage and Water Board Task Force. They just issued their report yesterday. We'll talk through that report and what the primary recommendations are. We have open lines in the first half of the 12 o'clock hour, and we'll talk about anything that you want to talk about. Colonel Robert Hodges joins us at 11:30, Superintendent, Louisiana State Police. They're in the process of developing their plans, their strategy relative to Troop NOLA, and we'll talk about what they have been doing thus far in the city of New Orleans and what they intend to do once they finalize the plans of Troop NOLA. At the top of the 11 o'clock hour, Congressman Troy Carter, as well as Sushil Kumar, who is the public information officer for the SBA, the Small Business Association West Office, is about the federal disaster declaration for the crawfish aquaculture industry. We'll talk about what that means and what they are bringing to the state of Louisiana relative to assistance. Zach Smith and Andrew Wilson, owner of a cigar bar in the quarter, Cuban Creations, they are trying to hold on to some of the accommodations that they were able to take advantage of during the pandemic. We'll see where that figures out. It seems as though it's worked well for them, worked well for the business. Neighbors like it, and we'll see where that goes. Right now, Tan Trung joins us, WWL multimedia journalist. Easter, obviously, this Sunday, and no better timing to talk about candy than today. Right, Tan?
Oh, you got it. You got it. And, it might be too early to eat, but I think that that's going to change in the next couple of days.
No doubt about it. So you visit with the Elmer's Candy Company, Chocolate Candy Company folks, and some really, really interesting details about Easter and why it's kind of different than all other holidays relative to chocolate candy.
Yeah, and with the podcast, with the Town Report, I try to find topical and kind of timely subjects, and it's hard to kind of figure out Easter because not everybody celebrates Easter, and you get into these religious kind of conflicts when it comes to who worships whom, but I thought that everybody could kind of settle and agree on that we eat candy during Easter. And I thought that taking a look at some of the traditions that are particular to this area, the Gulf South, New Orleans, and Louisiana, would be an interesting topic. And I didn't grow up here, and I think sometimes I catch flack for that, but I grew up eating a different brand of Easter candy, different types of Easter candy, but I didn't know how beloved and how treasured Heavenly Hash gold brick eggs and the pecan egg are. And those are some of the products that the Elmer Candy Corporation has been making going back to the 1920s and 1930s. And it's lasted till today. And the podcast is really taking a look at how regional our Easter candy consumption is. And to me, at least, it's a fascinating look at, what we do in certain regions when it comes to certain times of the year.
Rob Nelson, who is the CEO, is a representative of the family that owns Elmer's Candy Company at the present time. Actually, he's a former neighbor of mine. I think he just moved to the North Shore about a year or so ago. Great family, always been very active in New Orleans and the New Orleans metro area. But they find themselves in Ponchatoula now, over across the lake, right?
Yeah, they've been in there in Tangipahoa Parish in Ponchatoula, which obviously many of us know as the berry town, home of the Strawberry Festival. But they've been based in Ponchatoula since 1970. And as Rob described it to me, he said that, you know, that was sort of right around the time that the national retailers took advantage of refrigeration, mass refrigeration, and the ability to move things across interstate lines and state lines because of refrigeration trucks and so on and so forth. And that allowed them to take their headquarters out of New Orleans. They were based in New Orleans since 1855 in the Warehouse District, and moved their headquarters into Ponchatoula, which is where they are today. And the reason that they chose that area is that it's in this nice kind of intersection of I-55 and I-10. You can move things easily along the Gulf South as well from there. And, you know, it's also a really kind of great town just to be based in. It's small, and they're getting a good workforce there. But, you know, when you mentioned that you had Rob Nelson as a neighbor, I'm curious. I'm probably imagining that he never had a lack of sugar if you ever needed some sugar, Newell.
Yeah, I can't imagine that we did. I never had the guts to go ask him for candy, though.
Come on. He's the CEO of a candy corporation.
You I know. I missed a golden opportunity there for sure. Interestingly, there's so many details about this, as you mentioned earlier, that Elmer's actually goes back to the 1800s. One of the older manufacturers of confectionery and chocolate candies and the like, and a very interesting history as it went from owner to owner and certain challenges that they faced over the years, bringing it to where we are today, where they say they are the most advanced technologically and the most automated chocolate manufacturer in the country.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool assignment for me. And I often kind of kick myself thinking, it's like, how did I get into this situation in the most positive way? But I found myself very much in Elmer's chocolate factory. And I say at the head of the podcast that if there was ever a time that I could say that I was like a kid in a candy store, that was it. I was physically in this place that was creating, I mean, there was chocolate and candy everywhere. But, you know, it went from this very historical 1855-based company based in New Orleans to now in Ponchatoula. And if you think of Ponchatoula, you don't necessarily think of state-of-the-art technology. But at least within the confines of the Elmer Candy Corporation, they went to a full automation system several years back, probably during their expansion in 2015 and 2016. It was a $45 million expansion of their facility in Ponchatoula. And what they did is, it's right now it's all automated. And that can sound like an evil term, because in this day and age, when you hear of automation, you think of job killers for humans, for people. But that's not necessarily the case for the Elmer Candy Corporation, since they've gone to all these robotic arms and these automated assembly conveyor lines as well. They've increased their output. And as Rob Nelson was describing it to me, because they have so much more output, they need more humans to match that output instead of just doing the quantity kind of focused jobs in terms of just creating the chocolate and then packaging it. That's now put to the robots and the automation. The people now are in more qualitative roles and checking quality of chocolates, making sure that the computers and the machinery is online. And because they run so many more shifts than they used to, because they can basically run many more hours, they need more humans. So it's this weird anomaly where automation has actually increased jobs and increased payroll at a particular company. Obviously, that's not the case for every sector of the economy, but in this particular case, it is. And I find that fascinating.
Absolutely. And just for our folks to put this in context, their production line is 130 yards long, and they're actually able to package 4,000 pieces of chocolate a minute. That's insane.
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, I don't know the specific, schematics for that. And that was just one particular line. That particular line that Rob was describing when you talk about the 130 yards, that was just one particular room. It's cavernous when I went through there. And, you know, there's a whole set of protocols that you have to go through because you're dealing with a food. You're dealing with something that people are consuming. So I had to go through a sanitizing kind of process. And, I look very great in a smock and a hairnet, and I'm going to keep sporting that outside of the factory. But, you know, they have to be concerned about those issues because you're putting out a product that potentially millions of people will be consuming. And, you know, in this day and age, peanut allergies and nut allergies have to be concerned about, you know, the cleanliness and the quality of their food. But it's hard to describe. I posted a couple of videos on my social media of what just one section of the assembly line looks like. But, you know, it is full automation. There is this candy everywhere, which can be quite fun to think about. But it's really a technological feat. And how they've been able to streamline that and then meld it with what they're doing on the human side is pretty wild to me. And at the end of the day, you know, it's what they're doing is just pumping out these candies that we're consuming. And you know, right now, what they're doing with that is really a model for potentially other places to kind of go after. But when it comes to particularly because we're talking about Easter candy, none of that's really part of the equation, which is also fascinating to me.
Yeah, so let's go there real quick. Everything that we just said, folks, is how they produce their candy day in and day out, their Christmas candy, Valentine's Day candy. All of that goes out of the window when it comes to Easter candy, which just completely blew me away when we said that. And it really moves, as he said, more from science back to art when they do their Easter candy. Why is that?
Well, because some of the production of what we see every year on the shelves here, you know, you're talking about Heavenly Hash, the Gold Brick Egg, the Pecan Egg, they have to basically put some of those elements, the chocolate and certainly the nuts, inside by hand. And that's how they used to do it. So it's still, they're still using machines, they're using conveyor lines and so on and so forth. But you're going to have people physically putting nuts and chocolate, and then you're going to deal with some of the marshmallows that need human handling as well. So the automation goes away because the Easter candy is highly specialized, and it's only for a particular window of time. So it's only a 6 to 8 week window that they're producing Easter candy because they have to do it early enough to make sure that the stores have it in time for our sales and, you know, our shopping experiences in Walmart or CVS or wherever you get your candy at the Rouse's. They have to do that ahead of time. But that particular process to make the pecan egg, the gold brick egg, and the heavenly hash, it's something that you can't teach a machine to do because it's highly specialized. So as Rob described it to me, you're going to see people during that time with a lot of sugar, a lot of starch on their shirts. It's not, you know, and I'll say this, is that their facility is hyper clean. It's uber clean. But he said that kind of goes away and there's going to be more stuff on people and the floor because, you know, that's how the human process is. But that's only just for the Easter candy. And I think that's what makes it so special for people here.
Now, interestingly about Easter as well, it's more regional, right? There's a lot of nuances and customs as it relates to the Easter celebration. And therefore, folks gravitate to the more regional candy maker. And obviously, Elmer, as Mr. Nelson says, I think is kind of the Gulf South from Houston to Pensacola up through the I-20.
Yeah, and I was trying to be a wise ass when I asked him, why is that your market? Is everybody else north of I-20 and north of I-10 heathens? And he said it really goes back to, the history of the Candy Corporation itself. And he said that back in the day, there was only a handful of what he called general line candy companies. And Elmer was the one for the Gulf South. So you had the Elmer company here. And if you think about the Hershey company in Pennsylvania, they had their kind of market within the Northeast. That's where I grew up, and I grew up eating a lot of Hershey products. But down here along the Gulf South, it was Elmer territory. So what they did was during Easter, they would produce these highly specialized candies, the ones that we know now, the Heavenly Hash, the Gold Brick Egg, and the Pecan Egg. And that just kind of seeps through years and years of tradition, because as Rob was describing to me, he said that Louisiana is one of these rare places that most people who are born here, or most people who have lived here, were born here and they stay here. So if you grew up just eating Heavenly Hash and Gold Brick Egg and Pecan Eggs, that's what you're going to eat every Easter. And, you know, it was a new phenomenon to me when I came to the New Orleans area back in the early 2000s. I was like, what is this Gold Brick Egg? Because I grew up eating Cadbury cream eggs and the hard-shelled Hershey cream eggs. And it was a new phenomenon. But it speaks to the regionality of how we celebrate certain holidays and certainly the stuff that we eat. You know, obviously crawfish and beignets are something that we eat down here. And apparently that's the same thing that applies for us when we're talking about Easter candy.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how a lot of things change, but the Meltaway Center in the Gold Brick, which was established in 1936, is still the same. And with little changes, very minor changes, Heavenly Hash, which was developed in 1923, still the same. When you think about it, it's crazy.
It's still the same. And as Rob would say and told me, you know, they have to be careful about putting nuts and peanuts and certain chocolates in there, what he calls their mainline chocolates. But the Heavenly Hash and the other Easter candy, those are made back in the day before we had people complaining and you know, getting up in arms about having peanuts and nuts in their chocolate. That's the way it always has been. And he said that if we changed that formula, he said there would be torches and pitchforks outside of the company telling them to please put the almonds and the nuts back in and the pecans in, because that's the way it's always been. But, you know, just as an example, though, I mean, I posted the podcast online today to my social media feed. And, you know, I had people saying, well, when are they going to bring back the malt version of this? And you know, what about the full egg version of the Gold Brick Egg and so on and so forth? So people's history goes back so far with this, and you know, they very much have this close to their heart when it comes to Elmer candy.
No doubt. In fact, I'm getting texts now, and got a text here that says, don't forget about those awesome chiwis from Elmer. It's not Easter candy, but it's chiwis. I guess that was a precursor to Cheetos, and obviously a lot of folks love those as well.
Yeah, as Rob described it, the Elmer Corporation used to be one company, and they also produced chiwis, which was, as you mentioned, the precursor to Cheetos. But that broke apart when you know, the Nelson family came in. They bought them out, and the company and chiwis is still produced by Elmer Fine Foods in New Orleans, but that's a separate company now. But again, you mentioned the Elmer company, and people have all these nostalgic memories of, you know, what they ate, whether it was chiwis or candies and Easter candy. And I think that's the beautiful thing of living here, is that these traditions hold up, even though we have so many changes going around us.
The one little thing that was interesting too, is that, his employees, when they're walking around in Ponchatoula, they're wearing T-shirts that say that they know the Easter Bunny. I got a big kick out of that. You know? And I guess everyone associates those folks that they work at Elmer's, obviously.
Yeah, and they break those out, and they do something special each year to kind of signify the time that they're going into Easter mode. And, you know, this particular year, they handed out and they gave the employees a T-shirt saying, I know the Easter Bunny, just to kind of say, you know, we're in this time to make these candies that people love. It's only a certain window of time. And, you know, I would say that if you see somebody with a T-shirt saying, I know the Easter Bunny, be a friend to them, because that's somebody you should know. And that's in a pinch, if you need some chocolate, maybe they can help you out.
Absolutely. And we just touched on a few details that are provided in this incredible story. There's another story, I'm not going to say it, but you really want to hear it, because it's a lot. It has to do with Hershey and Elmer, and it's really funny to think about it, and just how much that we've embraced this company over the years, and everybody's totally aware of it. So where can we find the podcast, Tom?
They can find the Tahn Report, so that's T-H-A-N-H. Just punch that into wherever you get your podcast, and that's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. It's also on the Odyssey app, and you can also find the Tahn Report right on the website of WWL Radio. We got the link right on the radio website right now.
Another great job and another great story. I just love these stories. They're just so interesting. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Newell. Happy Easter, my friend.
Same to you, my friend. Tahn Truong, WWL multimedia journalist. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll be talking to Andrew Wilson, owner of the cigar bar Cuban Creations. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, folks. You will recall that during the pandemic, there were accommodations made in all different ways, some may even say in exotic ways, in order to benefit business owners for good reason. A lot of business owners have grown accustomed to some of these accommodations and have begun to engage with the city of New Orleans to see whether or not they're able to continue to do so. We're joined by Zach Smith. He owns Zach Smith Consulting, and Andrew Wilson, who's the owner of the cigar bar Cuban Creations, which is one of the few cigar bars in the Vieux Carré area in the French Quarter, and they join us here. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Noel.
Good morning, Noel. Thank you so much.
So, guys, if you just would give us the background, what is it that we're actually trying to accomplish here?
Thanks for that question, Noel. What we're essentially working with the city with right now is Mr. Wilson's business has had a request in to essentially make permanent the parklet outside his business at the Cuban Creations cigar bar in the 500 block of Toulouse in the French Quarter.
And so a parklet is actually defined in the code, right? In the zoning ordinances where they created this for during the pandemic, is that correct?
Yes, so there were temporary allowances during COVID because of just that immediate need to push people outside, keep businesses going. And essentially, there's already some allowances in certain parts of town for these parklets in certain commercial areas to essentially allow for those kind of tables and chairs and additional business operations to exist, not just on the sidewalk, but in this case, out there in those kind of parking lanes, you know, outside of the actual driving lane and streets. But in all of the cases, they're in commercial corridors. And unfortunately, in this situation, there's a situation, and Mr. Wilson can be able to explain it, about how important this parklet is to his customers, to his business, to his employees, to maintaining operation in the 500 block of Toulouse and making sure that another business does not fall in the city of New Orleans.
So to either one of y'all, am I to understand that the city has, in fact, approved the continuation of the parklets for some businesses in some areas already?
For many of the businesses in many of the areas, it's been approved. It's just been selected at these certain small little zones that are not allowed a parklet to be had, which I feel is a competitive advantage to where the business is specifically.
So what they're saying, they're at the present time, their position on this issue, have they articulated a position on this issue?
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, my feel is that they've been very supportive of it. You know, there's a small portion of residents far away from here that disapprove of it. But we've had nothing but positive feedback from everyone around us, the businesses, the residents. I live upstairs. I own the business next door. You know, it's nothing but a positive impact that we've had. Not to mention that we've created a lot of jobs from this. I went from zero employees to 46 employees in a 24-month period, which, you know, that's changing a lot of people's lives. So
where are you in the process at the present time, Andrew? I mean, how's this thing going to flow, and where are you? Has there been any decision made, or you're still trying to make your case?
We're still trying to make our case, and you know, we're trying to find some sort of resolution with that small group that disapproves of it. I mean, I love this city. I've been here for 6 years. I want to keep growing in the French Quarter. Any type of people that want to preserve it, or you know, I want to work with them. I support what they do. I just know that economics is the key to preservation, and there's no point in going backwards. You know, there's a little statistic I'll share with you. You know, there's about 95% of the businesses in the French Quarter are yet to achieve 2019 revenues. So there's definitely a lot of work to be done, you know, because of COVID and things of that nature. But removing our parklet is going to remove jobs. It's going to give us a setback. And there's a lot more pressing issues on this block, you know, blighted buildings. There's a health and safety issues. There's lots of things going on than to remove this outdoor scene. And, I mean, if anything, it preserves the buildings from people going in them and allow them to enjoy the French Quarter for what it is and what I love and a lot of people do.
Because on that particular block, I believe there are at least two buildings that are empty. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's two. I mean, there's two massive buildings that are empty. And, you know, it's not very well lit. You know, there's a huge parking lot across the road. Like I said, I'm one of three residents on the block. And we have full support from all the residents that are on the block, including the building owners and the business owners. So we're really kind of the only show in town, and we're just trying to enhance that zone, you know, to make it a better place going forward.
And what is your hope, or they've given you a timeline as to how long they think it will take to get through this process?
I mean, well, the law's already really been written, and it's, you know, parklets are allowed in pretty much everywhere else in the city of New Orleans except a couple roads. So there's another vote coming up here at the end of April, but it's coming soon, you know. So, and we actually have I'm in the cigar business, but there's a massive convention coming to town next year. That's a $15 million economic impact with two years of commitment. And because of the nature of the smoking ban in Louisiana, we're going to be probably the only place that these people can go to after this convention. So, you know, it's pivotal that this business stays open and is able to thrive in the French Quarter.
Where is your
point? Oh,
go ahead, Zach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure to answer that question as well. There is definitely a desire here for a common sense compromise. It's something that we've had some very good support, again, from neighbors, other businesses. Anybody that works in the quarter They know how the quarter, they've seen the quarter just devolve when things turn to blight and when businesses go under. And it's something that we have, we believe there's still plenty of time here to work out this compromise with folks that might not be before it. And I want to commend the leadership of Councilman King, who I think is extremely supportive of coming to a common sense compromise to make sure that these existing businesses and the potential for existing businesses, there's only four businesses in the quarter. You know, this is actually a pretty large neighborhood when you think about how many square blocks there are, but there's only four. And looking at a common sense way to hopefully preserve these so that, again, we don't do negative, we don't have a negative action against our existing businesses. We understand if there's somebody new and there's a set of rules and it's no longer allowed, I respectfully disagree with that. But at the same time, we have to preserve our existing businesses. And to that bigger question of what does that timeline look like? In April, we are looking for a final vote of the city council. And we would hope to have, again, that compromise with folks that we disagree with. We respect their opinions on historic preservation. We respect their opinions on what they believe is in the best interest of the neighborhood. At the same time, again, blight always trumps anything else in a very deleterious and negative way.
Is there friction about the historical impact on the history? I mean, you know, at one point in time, before there was air conditioning, before there was anything, I mean, there was a lot of outside dining. What's interesting for me is that we really, as a result of the pandemic, have become more of a community in spite of our heat, in spite of the humidity levels here. We're working around it, an outdoor dining community, and we hadn't been that for a long, long time. And it's almost as if the pandemic gave us a taste of something, and the folks that I talked to, they like it.
As far as the historical perspective, what if someone could explain to me the difference between outdoor seating in the Warehouse District on Frenchman Street in the CBD and the Vukare, why are all those other places allowed to have it, yet the Vukare is disallowed from a historical perspective? You know, we need fairness across the board. I'm all about history. I'm all about preservation. But right. You can't say that history is to be protected or preserved in one area and then an outdoor seating area in somewhere that you feel that it shouldn't be. It just feels like, you know, that it should be fair across the board. You know, it provides a great service. You know, it's just, you know, they, you know, we've been called bad actors, and which is completely unfair. We've been licensed since day one. We have insurance. There's plenty of other things out there that are not permitted. You know, we've done everything we need to do to the letter of the law, other than change the aesthetics of it, but we would love to change the aesthetics and make it in line with the historical, you know, skyline of the French Quarter. You know, if we just had that compromise with those people that have made a lot of good positive things around the French Quarter.
You know, it's interesting. I think about all the places that I've traveled that have a similar history as we do in the French Quarter in certain sections of their city. San Francisco, they have outside dining in a whole number of those places. Chicago, they have outside dining in a number of those places. Boston, plenty of outside dining, you know, through a number of their historic areas. New York, the same. Philly, the same. These are all cities that have dined outside, you know, where they made accommodations in historic neighborhoods and otherwise, in a huge way. Boston, one of the biggest, you know, in they seem to have worked it out in every other one of these cities. It just doesn't seem like rocket science to me.
No, I mean, I've asked for these objections from the group that disapproves of it, and there's no real tangible objections to it. It's other than, we just don't want it in that location, but we are specified in a commercial zone and not in a residential zone. So that, you know, if I had the argument or if there was anything that we could address, we are totally open to addressing it. But we've never been given any type of, you know, like I said, argument to why not to have it.
Yeah.
Newell, you make a great point. You know, these are great American cities that have found a way to coexist this way. And these are places that, you know, we have to call it what it is. They're thriving. And we continue in some capacities to cut our nose off where we want to be, you know, just stick to our principles. And we go back to the same position where if Andrew and his family are unsuccessful in this location, we end up where no businesses are truly in the 500 block of Toulouse. You know, and that's just one microcosm that, of course, people are seeing it play out block by block all over the place. You know, the Times-Picayune continues to write articles about population loss, young people not moving here. Partially it's because they don't necessarily have anything to do after they get off of work. What do they have to do? Where are those hip scenes? Where are those places that they can go? And maybe right before they're in the starting the family years, they're missing out on those opportunities because we've essentially said, well, we have these great neighborhoods that we really only want certain people to sometimes be able to enjoy. And in this particular case, you hit the nail on the head. Again, you travel around the world, you see that this stuff is not detrimental to these places, but they augment and they help these places excel. So we just want that same sort of treatment here. And we would again love all the public support we can get.
Yeah, you know, I think Freddie King has done a great job on a whole lot of different issues that are very complex and always seems to be able to find a you know, and touch that delicate balance. So best of luck to both of you guys. We appreciate you joining us. I think the general public, for the most part, would be on your side on this issue. I think the way that we view the way that we're dining now, you know, loving the outdoors has changed. And it definitely changed because of the accommodations that were made from the pandemic. And I know in Jefferson Parish, there are a number of restaurants that have been able to do it, and they're holding on to it. And I can tell you, their patrons don't want to lose it. I mean, so,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Because they have grown accustomed to it and they love it. Best of luck to you. Thank you for joining us today. Zach Smith and Andrew Wilson. Andrew is the owner of the Cigar Bar Cuban Creations. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
On a text line, it says, Newell, please call out the name of the entity who is objecting to outdoor seating. It's not an entity. It's a group of residents in the French Quarter, from my understanding, that are objecting to that parklet continuing on at the present time. You know, as I said before, people, I think, have really grown accustomed to dining outdoors, and they enjoy it more. Kind of went by the wayside here. We all know why. Heat and humidity. But people are bringing in misters. They're bringing in fans. They're doing creative things to try and cool down. You go over on Bienville Street, there's a whole bunch of restaurants, outdoor dining, that are incredibly successful. Last night, myself and some friends, we went over to Sidecar NOLA. They have an internal courtyard there. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's beautiful. Great people working there. Really enjoy it. Been there about three or four times in the last 30 days because I'm an oyster-eating fool. They have some of the best raw oysters that I've had in a long, long time. And they got this little special. You get three oysters from the West Coast, three from the East Coast, and then six from the Gulf Coast to make up a dozen. Really great oysters, real salty oysters from the West Coast and the East Coast, too. And just really love it. And it's outdoors. It's just friendly. And you know, everybody's happy there, and I think folks have grown accustomed to it, and they truly, truly enjoy it. So we'll follow this up, and we'll give you a report as to where this stands. Breaking news, FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried is just sentenced to 25 years in prison for fraud. You'll remember the crypto investment firm Alameda Research that he was in charge of. He's 32 years of age, got 25 years. Prosecutors were asking for 40 to 50. The judge gave him 25. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Congressman Troy Carter and Sushil Kumar from the SBA relative to the federal disaster declaration for the crawfish aquaculture industry and what they are providing, and Colonel Robert Hodges, superintendent of Louisiana State Police, in the back half of the hour to talk about the permanent troop NOLA.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.